Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, the Buckmaster Contributor on Agriculture. He is a professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona Department of Environmental Science. His responsibilities include leading a program directed toward the development of irrigated crop production management strategies, all of that aimed at optimizing the economic and environmental impacts of a soil plant system. Professor Silvertooth is a fellow for both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. He knows what he's talking about, in other words, when it comes to agronomy. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Very good, Bill. Thank you. How are you doing?
Good. How was the trip to Yuma? What are the crops look like over there this year?
I've been out there the past 3 days this week. I've been going out almost every week for the past few months, right in the height of the produce season, working more with that now. And the crops look great. The market's been pretty good, so they're moving right along. A lot of harvesting coming out. A lot of you can see right now the transition beginning with the, as we call, moving into our spring and summer crops. There are a lot of beds that are listed up, ready to go for melon cantaloupes. They'll go for spring melons, and the early plantings will begin right away. So there's people that are bedding up and getting ready to plant. There's some plants, some fields going in with mulch. And then the late produce is coming out, and that'll finish up probably in March, about March, early March. Produce meaning lettuce, both head lettuce, romaine, buttercup, leaf lettuce, purple and green, broccoli, cauliflower. There's all kinds of stuff down there. There's celery, a lot of celery this year in the field.
Yuma County really is a produce hub, isn't it?
It's the epicenter, Bill,
for
winter vegetable production in the United States.
Mm.
So this, you go down there and you see all these trucks on I-8. They're coming out of Yuma, a lot of them. They're heading, they're distributing this fresh produce all over the country. So if you and I were to get on a plane today, fly back to your homeland up in Illinois.
Yeah, up in the Chicagoland area where I'm from. If I went to my supermarket in the Chicago area, chances are my head lettuce would be coming from Yuma County. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
About 100% chance. Yeah,
wow.
About everything in that. All the leafy green produce is coming out of Yuma right now. From about early November to about the middle of late March.
You know, you talked about early spring. I've often said spring comes first in Arizona, really anywhere in the United States.
Right.
And it comes, fall comes last. We have the cottonwoods around our birthday time, mid-December. Mm-hmm. That's when we're getting our fall color. So it's kind of weird to think about. We have a very small kind of transition period from late fall to actually early spring.
That's right. And that's what enables us to have these winter vegetable produce seasons in Arizona. Southwest Arizona is a perfect climate for that. When they finish up in Yuma, for example, here in a month or so, a couple of months, the whole industry picks up and moves back to the Salinas Valley in California. Mm-hmm. And that's where we ever get that same produce is coming out of the Salinas Valley through the summer months. And they move back to Yuma in August, start planting. By October, into October, early November, they're harvesting again. And so these companies that run provide this produce to us, really, out in the country, shipping companies, marketing companies, are working back and forth between these regions in the West. And they're taking advantage of climate. And our climate in the desert in the winter is conducive to that.
How about the price point this year? You know, we keep hearing about inflation at the supermarket. Have produce prices stayed steady?
I think they have. What I understand, I'm not in the business of selling, but talking to the growers, and they have caught them, have contracts.
Yeah.
Contracts are all holding, and I understand that they're doing well with it. They're harvesting all these fields. Usually you can tell if the market's not good, they'll walk away from some fields. I've seen beautiful fields of lettuce being discs. Mm. Because
so
the
you're
market
talking
falls
about,
out.
I'm trying to envision this, Jeff. You're talking about mile after mile of green.
Hundreds of thousands of acres.
Yeah,
that's the thing about radio. I can't show you photos, I've got a batch of them from just this week.
But you're saying it's just a sea of green.
Absolutely. It's beautiful. Mm. And of course, I'm an agronomist. That's beauty to me.
Where's the water coming from?
Colorado River.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado River. And therein lies an interesting twist right now. Mm-hmm. As you know, we're experiencing a shortage on the Colorado River, and a declaration was called in August by the Bureau of Rec, and we're going into what we call Tier 1 reductions. That's providing a reduction of 512,000 acre feet, of Arizona's normal 2.8 million acre-foot allocation of Colorado River water. That is being sacrificed, that gain or that loss, I should say, for 512,000 acre-feet of water is primarily coming out of the Central Arizona agricultural districts. So we're seeing the imposition of these agreements from the drought contingency plan that in that full body, we call that, generally speaking, all the rules, laws, regulations, agreements, contracts, all fits in into a large amalgam. And I'm not an attorney, but there's a body of this legislation, these rules and regulations we go by, called the Law of the River.
The Law of the River.
And one of the basic principles of the Law of the River, what's the governance on the water? Mm-hmm. How is it moving in the lower Colorado River Basin and the upper? And one of the provisions that's in there, they're kind of the theme, the philosophies, first in use, first in right. And along the Colorado River main stem, districts like Yuma, Imperial Valley to the west, Palo Verde Valley around Blythe, California, for example, all those districts started using that water first. So by law, they have first in use, they have first in right. But we're going to get a test on that in the next few years, probably before it's all said and done. And that's another story in itself. But right now, there are no cuts to that water to those folks in Yuma we're talking about right now. And so they're using it well. They're efficient with it, too. That's part of what I study and work with out there.
What about this desalinization talk that the governor brought it up in his state of the state? Is it realistic? And where would that water come from? Where would we it would have to come from the Gulf of Mexico?
Right. You know, there are several plans out there that have been floated. There's a desalinization plant in existence right now in Yuma. It was built by the Bureau of Reclamation back, I think, in the 60s. And it was done in relation to a treaty violation to Mexico. And we were sending water that was skimming into Mexico, which happens there right at Yuma, right at the border. And it goes into Mexico for their allocation of 1.5 million acre feet, but it was more saline than our water. The reason being was we were putting drain water coming out of the Gila River system into the Colorado River right there at Yuma, right above the place where the Mexicans were taking their water out. So their water was a higher salinity level and sodicity than our water up the Imperial Dam where we get it. So the agreement was made, we have to provide them a water, the same quality of water, within 150 part per million, plus or minus the mean level at Imperial Dam. And the salt plant, the desalinization plant was built to take care of that. We call it the salt plant. Mm-hmm. And it's a reverse osmosis plant, the technology from back in the 60s, 70s when it was put in place.
Is it working?
It works fine, but it's never been used.
Oh.
The irony is what we did in change, what the United States did was they built the concrete, they lined the canal for the drain water in the Gila River and took it and take it all the way, a pipe. We're 60 miles from the sea in Yuma.
Yeah.
So they take, instead of dumping it into the river, they run there's a canal that parallels the river all the way to the Cio Cortez, mm-hmm. down in the Santa Clara Slough, mm-hmm. and it dumps the water out there in the ocean. And actually, it provides an environmental service because it's some of the reliable water, consistent water going into that estuary down there in the lower Colorado River in the Delta, mm-hmm. which has been starved out because the river is cut off from all the mm-hmm. fully allocated. Mm-hmm. But that water, that drain water, goes there. So it bypasses the salt plant, the desalinization plant, never been used. It's still there. It could be put back into commission. So some people are talking about bringing it back into commission. That's one plan. The other mm-hmm. plan would be desalinization from seawater to Cio Cortez and bringing that back up north, upriver, into the United States.
That would have to have Mexican approval because Arizona, it does not have oceanfront land. You just said it's 60 miles to the ocean.
That'd be the closest. The other route would be over the mountains down to the Pacific Ocean in California. Of course, then California is facing the same sets of questions. Are they going to begin desalinization over there? But the plans that I have seen have been the proposals associated with Cio Cortez water, bringing it up the Colorado River Valley back into the United States. And, of course, the Mexicans would need to approve that.
Sure.
They need water, too. Mm-hmm. So who knows what will happen from that. But that's one of the plans, probably the one that's been talked about most recently.
You know, before we leave to take the break, what is this I'm hearing about locally? These hay prices are just out of sight. One of our groups that we support here on the show is mm-hmm. the Equine Voices Rescue Group.
Right.
South of Tucson. And these rescue groups are complaining that they've just, these hay prices have been out of sight.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, it's supply and demand. You know, the demand is huge for that hay all over the West.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this drought that we've been experiencing in the West the past 20 years, we're not the only ones being affected by that. And so hay prices are high because there's a real need for supplemental hay out on the range for cattle. Also, too, there's still a demand in the marketplace for beef. Cattle eat a lot of hay, alfalfa hay, and particularly in the wintertime. And then, of course, our dairy cattle utilize that hay very extensively. So there's a high demand for that. And, of course, we have these folks with horses, and they need good quality hay.
Mm-hmm.
So the hay's out there. They're not having much less than we'd had before. But I'll tell you, one of the things that's going to accelerate this even more is when those districts in central Arizona lose their water. They're losing 65% of their water this year, of CAP water.
Is that where our hay comes from?
You bet. That's the epicenter of a lot of hay production in Arizona, is right there in central Arizona. So they think it's bad. Now, my concern would be, hang on to see what happens in the next 6 months to a year when that water gets cut off in central Arizona.
So alfalfa grows there?
Absolutely. Mm. A lot of acres. So all the forages, alfalfa, corn, silage, et cetera, that's feeding all the cattle for those dairy farms and the feedlots in central Arizona, are mostly being grown locally. As a matter of fact, they actually import hay in because they have such a demand just for that large livestock in central Arizona, you know, food producing livestock. And then we have the recreational animals that need hay as well, and that's what your friends are talking about.
Yeah.
There. Yeah, so they're just getting into that market.
All right, we'll pause right here with Jeff Silvertooth. Be right back on the Buckmaster Show. For more information about things to do, like hiking in the Gila, or great places to stay, they're all listed there at southwestnewmexico.org. Let's go now on the live line. Roberta would like to speak with our guest, Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, University of Arizona agronomist. Go ahead, Roberta.
Thank you. How come nobody ever talks about taking water from Lake Tahoe, which could provide water for all of California and never run dry?
Hmm. Taking water from Lake Tahoe.
Right. That's a good question, Roberta. It has been discussed. It has been discussed, particularly in California and Nevada. They have had discussions of that, but they haven't had them. Well, what would happen, would be a major infrastructure would be required to take water out of there. Plus, you have Lake Tahoe economic community there that doesn't want to have that happen.
The tourism community, they don't want it.
Not at all. Matter of fact, they've had some water shortages. And
last year, Tahoe was at a record low level.
That's right. That's what I was just going to say. Yeah, I was just over there last year, and the reservoir for Shasta Reservoir was almost dry. Tahoe was down, and that day the Californians were concerned about that because they and the folks in Nevada right there on the border in the Sierras, that's a major economic engine for them, having the tourism and the lake associated with that. So there's I think politically and practically, Roberta, that there's probably a lot of resistance to taking water out of Lake Tahoe.
Owens Valley on the east side of the Sierra, historically they got their water from L.A. Wasn't that kind of what the movie Chinatown was about?
Chinatown was interesting. Yeah. It's a great movie.
It is.
But it kind of is a twist on that theme about that. But what happened, went the other way, Bill.
Okay.
William Mulholland from Los Angeles.
Mulholland Drive.
Yeah, Mulholland Drive. Bill, William Mulholland. He's really, we can get off on that topic, but he's kind of a grandfather of a lot of the waterworks in the Southwest. Mm-hmm. He realized that Los Angeles was living in a desert, and it could be a great metropolitan area in the West, a port and all that. They needed water. It's in a desert. They went scouting around and found water in the Owens Valley. That's when they built the Los Angeles Aqueduct and brought that water out of Owens Valley, brought it all the way to Los Angeles. Now, that's still the reverberations from that political deal still resonate today. And that's kind of was a take that what the movie Chinatown was pulling off. It's not really a good rendition of it, but it really did happen. And that's that water out of that Owens Valley is being transported to Los Angeles. It's one of their tributaries.
So they had a lot of water there in the Owens Valley?
Yeah, enough. But basically what they did is they pulled it out so there's no more agriculture up there. The agriculture is very different.
Basically,
sucked the water out. Yeah, it killed the economy, little towns up there. So it goes back to Roberta's question. Mm-hmm. It would take a project of that magnitude and the political climate to getting that done today is pretty tough. So I would guess, Roberta, in answer to your question, that in further answer to your question, that if they being in California decided to go after more water, it'd probably be more feasible to them to pursue the desalinization process. And also too, they're doing more with potable reuse water in Southern California. They have plants that can take water that's coming through from filtration from and reuse, clean it up, and put it back into place in perfectly potable water. It's as clean as the bottle of water I'm drinking right here in Bill's studio today.
Really?
Yes, sir.
So they clean up the water?
Well, that technology's there. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of Americans getting ready to get used to the idea.
Mm-hmm. But that's going on some places in Southern California.
It's going on all over the place.
So it is?
If you and I were to go to New Orleans and we drink water there, it's coming out of the Mississippi River. Well, that Mississippi River water has come all the way from... Well, really, it's come all the way from the Montana mountains, you know. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But and every city along the way is using that water and putting it back in there for the sewage reuse. And it's cleaned up subsequently along down the way. And there's, of course, say, well, there's dilution because there's more water coming into the river. But that's the way our waterways all are today in the United States. If you stop and think about it. But that's one that's probably coming to us pretty soon, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we need rain this winter. We had a really good December over in California, but January has been really dry again in California. They had some record snow levels. You were talking about Tahoe up in the High Sierra, but now January's dry.
Yes, sir. One of the things I always watch in that relationship is the Colorado River Basin snowpack. And it took off. It was looking great, you know, right about the 1st of January, like I say. It's kind of tapered off here. They've had a few storms of these last few months that have been dry for us in California, Southern California. They've been getting a little snow up there in Colorado, but that's another one to watch. It's critical for us. It's the snowpack in the Colorado River Basin.
All right. Until next time, Jeff Silvertooth, always a pleasure. Thank you very much,
Thank Jeff. You, sir. Thank you.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. We always enjoy having Dr. Silvertooth on the program. So much going on with water in the state of Arizona. And one thing, Jeff, real quickly, when you were over in Yuma, I'm sure everybody was talking about that 65% water reduction.
It's on everyone's mind, and particularly in agriculture. And I would say this too: when we look at the situation in places like Yuma, they're good stewards of the water.
They
and
are.
That's we're very alert to that, and they are great stewards of the water. There's a whole discussion that goes on with some of the pressures that they're experiencing, but they're not. You know, they get a lot of allegations thrown at them, and
they're wasting a bunch of water.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair. But they are good with what they do with that water there.
All right, Jeff, thanks for coming in.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, on behalf of Jeff Silvertooth, I'm Bill Buckmaster, and also don't forget Tom Fairbanks. Tom says he's wishing everyone well as well this afternoon. Everybody have a great 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 afternoon. Everybody have